I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Parallax is you observe an object, you see a change, but that change is not really a change in the object, but just a change in how you relate to the object in your perspective of the object.
Welcome to the testing room of the Parallax Corporation's Division of Human Engineering.
Now please cross the chair. And you will sit down. Make yourself comfortable. And be sure to place each one of your hands on the box on either side of the chair. Making sure that each one of your fingers is on one of the white rectangles. Just sit back. Nothing is required of you except to observe the materials that are presented to you. Be sure to keep your fingers on the box at all times. Alright? Hope you find the test a pleasant experience.
On this edition of Parallax Views, you'll hear the second part of my conversation with activist and journalist Pierce Redmond of Porkin's Policy Review and the Open Minds Foundation on the sordid saga of Jeffrey Epstein. In this part of the conversation, we'll take a deep dive into some of the other players in this sordid little story, as well as the web of connections that, at least peripherally, tie figures like Roger Stone and even Mike Cernovich to the scandalous world of Jeffrey Epstein. And finally, we will discuss the recent secretive low-key meeting that took place between Epstein and right-wing man of infamy, Steve Bannon, which leads to a little detour discussion of some of the skeletons in old Steve's own closet. I'll just leave it at that as a bit of a tease for what you'll hear in the discussion. The Epstein saga is without a doubt one of those tales that truly does justice to the old adage, truth is stranger than fiction. As with the previous episode, we're going to skip the musical transitions entirely and jump straight into the second part of my conversation with Pierce Redmond on the sordid saga of Jeffrey Epstein.
And that brings me to something I wanted to get into. You alluded earlier that you think this is more networked than just Jeffrey Epstein. Who are some of the characters in this tragic, you know, sordid little saga?
Well, I mean, there's his former girlfriend and very close friend, Ghislaine Maxwell, who, of course, interestingly, you know, she comes from money. Robert Maxwell was fabulously wealthy in the UK, and may or may not have been murdered by Mossad agents. That's definitely another show we could do at some point. But I would say, you know, she's probably like number one on the list. I mean, she worked directly with Epstein. She seems to also enjoy abusing young girls. If you read some of the probable cause affidavits, if you read some of the, you know, especially like Jane Doe 43's statements and stuff on what happened to her, you know, sometimes she would be made to, you know, Maxwell would have sex with her as well. Maxwell also on her phone had tons and tons of pictures of child pornography as well. And Maxwell seems to actually enjoy abusing these kids along with Epstein. And as I said, I mean, they were in a relationship for many years. They almost married at one point. But that didn't really happen. But they were always, you know, sort of thick as thieves. since then, and she seems to be the main kind of mover and shaker. And I think Epstein needed someone like Maxwell to kind of take that next step, because Maxwell had certainly knew lots and lots of very powerful people. I think she had the money to get a lot of this going. And, you know, Epstein, let's assume that he's always abusing young girls, right? I think Maxwell added an aura of respectability, and also allowed Epstein to expand his sexual trafficking enterprise to a new level. And I think it's through Maxwell that he meets a lot of these other people, you know, people like Jean-Luc Brunel, who's a French modeling agent. He owns this company called MC2 Modeling, which is rumored that Epstein was a silent backer in getting that modeling agency off the ground. But and he claims, you know, that he Brunel, if you listen to him, he gave Jerry Hall her start, Monica Bellucci, Rachel Hunter, Mila Jovovich, all sorts of Sharon Stone, he claims, Chrissy Turlington. But, you know, there's a famous, back in 1988, there was a 60 Minutes expose into Jean-Luc Brunel. And I mean, he's a very into, apparently, you know, date rape. That's his forte, is basically drugging them to the point where they're just basically completely and utterly unconscious. And, you know, Brunel certainly provided a lot of access to young girls. And, you know, he's rumored to, for Epstein's birthday one year, he flew just like a whole plane load of French children. And Brunel was somehow able to get passports for all these girls, flew them to his island, and then flew them back to France. So, you know, it's people like that. I think Maxwell allowed for Epstein to get more in bed with those kind of people. And then, you know, you have people like Sarah Kellen, or Sarah Kensington. She's changed her name a few times. She's actually married to Brian Vickers, who's a NASCAR driver. You know, and there's a whole weird story with that. But, you know, she's another person. Seems like, you know, she kind of came from money, might have been abused by Epstein. I'm not totally clear on that. You know, I would say she's a little bit lower down within this cast of characters. But Sarah Kellen was certainly very instrumental in getting access to kids. And she was very much the day to day. She would schedule all of the massages. That was one of Sarah Kellen's major, you know, things that she was involved in. You know, there's some other people as well. There's another
Leslie Groff.
Leslie Groff, yeah, Leslie Groff is another one. She was Leslie Groff. Generally, was in charge of providing like housing. You know, she would set them up. She would give them cell phones. She you know, she worked along with Sarah Kellen, but Leslie Groff, I think, is I don't know as much on Leslie. You know, there's less on Groff, but again, I would definitely suggest to your listeners to if they have like a Pacer account, just look up the case number for the Jane Doe 43, and I'll just give it out if anyone wants. It's 1-17-CV-00616. JGK. So you can just search that case number and you'll find a lot of information, including the criminal complaint, which really kind of lays out who all these people are. You know, Leslie Groff, Sarah Kellen, Ghislaine Maxwell. There's also, you know, there's people like Natalia Malyashev, who was absolutely a victim of Epstein's for many years. And then, you know, she started going out and recruiting other girls. As far as I know, Leslie Groff and Sarah Kellen, I can't piece together that they ever were abused by Epstein, which says even more. I don't know why they would even get involved with him, but there you go. Interestingly as well, Epstein's, in the Jane Doe 43 case, Epstein's lawyers are also defending Sarah Kellen as well. And I think Leslie Groff as well. They all have the same lawyers. So you can, you know, as opposed to Maxwell doesn't. So, you know, that says something about Maxwell and Epstein's relationship, which I think has actually soured. And again, I think Ghislaine Maxwell became so toxic in the media and because of the things that she was saying about Virginia Roberts, Epstein figured that she was no longer of use. This is his closest friend and his partner in crime. And, and Maxwell at one point sort of asked Epstein to kind of help and to intervene and basically to back up what she was saying, to back up her claims that Virginia Roberts was a liar. And Epstein never did that. And now in this, this new lawsuit that's going on, which I think actually has some legs to it, you see that Maxwell is not in that inner circle anymore. And, Epstein seems to want to protect Sarah Kellen, Leslie Groff, and Natalia Malyashev as well.
Those are the four women I'm seeing brought up as being the main players other than Epstein in the Jane Doe number 43 case. And by the way, for my listeners, if you just type in Jane Doe 43, that Pacer link comes up. So.
Yeah, and I think I even have I might have put up the criminal complaint on my own website. I can't remember. If I didn't, I will, because it's worth doing. But I encourage everyone to get anyone can get a Pacer account. It's really great, especially if you want to like follow things like this, because you can look at the docket sheet. You can find there's a lot of great information that you can get through Pacer. Those are the main ones. There's as I said, there's another. There's another woman who used work very closely with Sarah Kellen, and her name is escaping me right now, and I'll try and find what it is. She ran this weird flight school, and she used to be one of Epstein's pilots. She was very close with Sarah Kellen, and I would count her within this sort of clique because she was intimately involved. There's famous pictures of her and Sarah Kellen at parties and stuff like that. So I'll try and find her.
Is it Nardia Marchinova?
Yes. And she's changed her name as well. Marchinkova has changed her name a few times as well. But yeah, she ran a flight school. She used to fly Epstein around. And she worked very closely with Sarah Kellen recruiting girls. So those are the main ones. Leslie Groff, Sarah Kellen or Kensington, Nadia Marchinkova, and Ghislaine Maxwell. And then, you also have the Jean-Luc Brunel, who was certainly providing lots of access. He kept visiting Epstein while he was in prison, like almost daily. And there's also Larry, I think his last name is Viscosi, who was Epstein's longtime pilot. And that is one of the other, he was in a deposition. And that's one of the only depositions from an Epstein employee or someone related to Epstein where he actually spoke at length about what was going on. So definitely check out the Larry Viscosi, I believe is his name. His deposition is a gold mine. There's a lot of information there about how he operated, about what he did. And he is very careful to never implicate himself, but he obviously knew what was going on. Especially if the Lolita Express, if any of those rumors are meant to be true, I would say Viscosi was intimately involved in abuse, or at least in turning a blind eye to a lot of this abuse. And then there's also, Alfredo Rodriguez, who was his, butler, houseman. He certainly, he had to make the bed and clean up the massage table after every session. So, I mean, he knew what was going on as well. I mean, all of his, like, staff, like his house staff, they're all kind of turning a blind eye at best. But, yeah, I would say the main people are Nadia Marchenkova, Sarah Kellen, Leslie Groff, and Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah, it's weird just looking over his list of people that are friends, because it almost reads like a who's who of people that I absolutely, like, despise. People like Larry Summers.
Yeah.
Steven Pinker is a friend of his, apparently, who is now going all alt-right on everyone. Lawrence Krauss, who just got in trouble for sexual harassment. It's a who's who of, you know, assholes.
Oh, yeah. It remind me, JG, Pinker is he's a professor, like a linguist, right?
I mean, Pinker hasn't written any academic papers in a long time, much like Dawkins. He's essentially a public intellectual now. He started out in linguistics. He wrote The Blank Slate. He has a new book out now called Enlightenment Now.
Mm.
But he's like, everything is fine. The world's getting better. And he's very deceptive with statistics. He's sort of he's published people like Stephen Siller, who's a white nationalist. Mm-hmm. He's a weird character himself.
They, in the original lawsuit, there is this big, you know, letter that I think it was Gerald Lefcourt wrote on Epstein's behalf. This is the letter where it's revealed that Epstein was, a founder of the Clinton Foundation, among other things. But they actually quote Pinker at length in that, and using Pinker's, I believe they actually asked Pinker as like an expert for his advice on this. And he gave this really just insane linguistic reasoning about, these girls were saying that they were of age when they weren't. And, you know, and that means that this sort of part of Epstein's brain. So they Pinker actually, you know, defended him. The same way that, you know, Lawrence Krauss and all these other sickos. Lawrence Krauss, when he was asked about Epstein, he said there wasn't like enough empirical scientific evidence to prove that he was a pedophile or something like that. Which, you know, is that just that, like, you know, birds of a feather, or is that there's a video of Pinker and Lawrence Krauss with little kids somewhere, you know, on one of Epstein's trips? Because, you know, a lot of same thing with Dawkins would go down to Epstein's Island. Stephen Hawking was there. God only knows what was going on down in his private island, where nobody was into any, you know, he totally free to do whatever he wanted. And we know that in Palm Beach, he had all the rooms wired with video cameras, and that the Palm Beach PD, they knew exactly where the video cameras were because they helped him install them. A few years back, before he got in trouble, because he had claimed that there were some break-ins or that somebody was stealing money, and the Palm Beach Police Department helped him install these video cameras, which is just an odd fact in all of this.
Well, I wanted to get into too. You mentioned before that there's a connection to everyone's favorite. I think he fancies himself the Kevin Spacey character in House of Cards. Roger Stone himself is has a connection to Jeffrey Epstein. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So I'll try and condense it because it's a long story. But Scott Rothstein is a now disgraced former Florida lawyer, serving 50 years in prison for a $1.2 billion. With a B, Ponzi scheme. Again, it's funny that all these guys, everyone's like a Ponzi schemer when it comes to the world of Epstein. But he was head of a Rothstein Rosenfeld Adler law firm, and the Ponzi scheme pitch was that Rothstein would be working on a huge case. And sometimes it would be like a celebrity case or something, or, you know, rich people, but he'd be working on a huge case, and that the quote investor in question could buy a stake in a structured settlement. So he would have a big case where he's suing someone, and he would approach what he referred to as investors. And he would just say, well, you know, if you give me some upfront money right now, let's say $20,000, you're going to get a big chunk of this $2 million settlement that I'm going to get. And that was Rothstein's scheme. And really crazy. I mean, he's an interesting character in and of himself, especially, you know, down in Florida. There's always weird shenanigans going down in that state, but he's a very big figure there. And one of these big cases that Rothstein used to swindle people was the 2008 civil cases filed by Brad Edwards against Jeffrey Epstein on behalf of several of his victims. And Rothstein even admitted that he would use the Edwards case specifically as a big one in order to get money. And Epstein would actually end up paying like 5.5 to settle all these lawsuits. And then in 2009, Epstein sued Edwards, alleging that he was in on the Ponzi scheme. That, you know, because when this whole Ponzi scheme came to light, Epstein was like, oh, well, is that, you know, were you going after me, or were you fabricating, you know, were these witnesses fabricating events because you were part of this Ponzi scheme? And then he ended up dropping that lawsuit in 2012 because he was basically unable to prove anything. And Rothstein did, you know, he swore that Brad Edwards was never aware of any of this. But the kicker is that Roger Stone was a longtime friend and business associate with Scott Rothstein and his law firm. And Stone was a partner in RRA Consulting, which was the consulting arm of this law firm. And he provided lobbying, personal assistance to all of RRA's legal clients. And Stone even had an office in RRA's New York branch. And I don't know if you're like a Stone aficionado, but, Stone is famous. There's an audio recording of him, going after Bernard Spitzer, Elliot Spitzer's father, saying he's going to, you know, ruin him and expose all this stuff. And that tape, you know, became public. And it was a speed bump for Stone's career. That phone call was made in the, Rothstein's satellite office in New York. Where, you know, he threatened that he was going to testify over campaign loans and all this stuff. And Stone and RRA were also involved in Carl Paladino's unsuccessful bid for governor. And Paladino is this right-wing nut job from Buffalo who tried to run for governor. And Stone put a lot of money behind him. You know, there's a lot of there's even more sort of strange stuff with Stone and Rothstein, because there was I think it was when Rothstein went bankrupt or something. Stone is like, or no, I'm sorry. Epstein is like listed along with Roger Stone in this big bankruptcy trial, because they were all trying to get money from when Rothstein's whole business went kaput. But basically, the main takeaway from all of that is, was Rothstein at any point funneling information to Epstein? I'm sorry, to Stone on the Epstein case. You know, why has Stone never publicly spoken about this? You know, he when he's on InfoWars, he never talks about the fact that because again, Roger Stone, he wrote this book about the Clintons, where he talks about Jeffrey Epstein. But Stone swears, you know, Donald Trump is holier than thou, nothing to see here. He didn't, you know, he wasn't friends with Epstein. I was Roger Stone blocked me on Twitter after we had an exchange where I, you know, was sort of pressing him about Trump's connections to Epstein. And then he called me like an idiot and blocked me. But he's never spoken about the fact that he was he was working with a guy who was selling shares in possible settlements with Epstein. And for a while, the StoneZone.com, his website, was sponsored by Rothstein and RRA, the law firm. Stone even pushed for Rothstein to be a senator in Florida back in August of 2009. So very interesting. Again, there's nothing totally concrete there, but of all the people, of all the gin joints, Roger Stone is yet again kind of connected in with all of these people. And I do believe that, you know, at the time when the lawsuits were going on with Epstein, you know, when Brad Edwards was in the civil cases in 2008, I would assume that you know, Trump wanted to keep his name out of this, and it appears that was the case. Trump was not named in any of this stuff, even though I believe that there were Brad Edwards interviewed Trump at one point. But I speculate that perhaps Rothstein was funneling information to Stone, and Stone was able to relay that to Donald Trump, in much the same way that, you know, of all the people in the world that Donald Trump hires to be the Secretary of Labor is Alexander Acosta, who was the federal prosecutor who cut Epstein the sweetheart deal. Now, I think that is entirely about keeping these guys close to Trump. He wants to be able to control them, and I think he wants to know that, you know, they're not going to spill the beans or do anything silly, because he's, you know, he's elevated them to these positions. And who knows? It's purely speculation. Maybe Acosta made sure that Trump's, you know, was not named in any of these deals, especially given the fact that at least two victims, including Virginia Roberts, worked at Mar-a-Lago. But Trump is, you know, never really, he's never seen as being connected to any of this.
Isn't Epstein's house like
spitting
right
distance
down the street from Mars
Largo?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But again, Trump is like never, you know, it's just that, I knew vaguely of him. That's the best excuse he's ever given. This is the guy, you know, 15 years, best friend, blah, blah, blah. Then cut to, 2008. 2006, 2008 period, where all this stuff is hitting the fan. Trump never heard of the guy. You know, he was just a member, but I never met him, and then I kicked him out of the club when I found out what he was doing, which is complete, utter BS. But again, Trump's never, in any of these revelations, even the fact that you know, at the very best, this guy was using Trump's resort as a place to procure underage girls, Trump is just nowhere to be seen. So, you know, it's very interesting that he chooses Alexander Acosta to be labor secretary. Very interesting that, you know, shortly after Trump is elected, he, you know, when he was holding court in Mar-a-Lago, who comes to visit him for a private meeting? Alan Dershowitz. I doubt that they were just talking about the weather or sports. I think that they were specifically talking about the Epstein stuff, and you see Alan Dershowitz doing this, you know, he's basically just, he is Trump's biggest fan now, and I think that's entirely due to the Epstein stuff. I think that's what Dershowitz is signaling to Donald Trump.
Well, it's so weird, too, because, like, these right-wingers like Hannity, and I think even Stone, always like to bring up Epstein in connection with Bill Clinton.
But, oh, yeah.
I mean, if you blow the lid off connections to Trump, the whole fucking thing goes down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a plane crashing for them.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And they know that too. You know, I mean, they're aware of that. That's why they kind of, you won't see Hannity bringing up Epstein. You definitely are not going to see Roger Stone bringing up Epstein at this point.
I mean, Hannity used to.
Yes, he did. He used to, and but it was always with regards to, as you said, Clinton. You know, and that is part of the. That's part of a much larger problem that I think was solidified with the Epstein case, is the politicization of sexual abuse. So, you know, at one point in time, if you were a politician and you got caught with a, you know, a little boy or a dead prostitute, you know, the two cliches, it didn't really matter what side of the aisle you were. You know, everybody kind of was like, that's messed up. You know, like you're cruising around public toilets looking for kids. I mean, that's just a fucked up thing. Nobody is really going to come to defend that. But with the Epstein thing, the odd part is that both sides of the aisle will use the Epstein saga to their own advantage. So again, Hannity will bring up Epstein, but only if it's to talk about Bill Clinton. Whereas you'll see people on the liberal side of the equation bringing up Epstein, but only because of stuff that Donald Trump has said. You know, I mean, Rachel Maddow is not going to go on and on about Bill Clinton, you know, flying down with Epstein, shaking his Secret Service detail and going down there. That's never going to, you know, she's never going to do that. Now, she might bring up Epstein in so much as it, you know, it hurts Donald Trump, which he has alluded to in the past. So that's a very interesting thing, is just like how politicized the sexual abuse of these young girls, the level that's come to. And we see that now, like with things like Roy Moore, you know, it's like Roy, no, it's okay. You know, he's not that bad. Or I don't know, you know, maybe it wasn't really like that. And then, you know, it's like a day later, there's some Democratic, you know, House member or something is beating his wife or having affairs or slapping interns on the butt. No, he's evil. You know, that's bad, or he's okay. So, but I think a lot of this really kind of goes back to the Epstein thing, because it touched so many people. You know, it was like unavoidable, but everyone has chose to pick a political side in an issue which should be simple. Bill Clinton, you know, he should go to jail for hanging around Epstein, and so should Trump. End of story. But people now are really kind of picking and choosing, and I think it's really sad, because I fear that the, you know, as time goes on, with each new scandal or whatever incident, you know, sexual crime, it'll become more and more politicized, to the point where it's like, you know, we're gonna have an election where you have who do you want to vote for, the Democratic pedophile or the Republican pedophile? You know, that you know, that's a I think sometimes the sort of a they're normalizing pedophilia thing, kind of, I think it people go a little bit too far with that. You know, and I don't think that it's part of the, you know, the evil liberals in Hollywood, but the fact that we've elected politicians knowingly, knowing that they've had connections to Jeffrey Epstein, is abhorrent. And again, I mean, that's like, that was, you know, that was my whole thing with the election, you know, oh, who are you going to vote for? It's like, well, they're both so horrible, and they're both connected to this guy. Not to mention Jeb Bush, governor in Florida, you know, I mean, he had to know about Epstein. you know, and, but yeah, you know, and like I said, then you get things like Roy Moore, you know, where Bannon is saying he's great. You know, it doesn't matter what he did. And, you know, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about this. And the only time that I can remember where Epstein's name has been brought up in connection to Donald Trump in a very overt way is from Steve Bannon. Bannon. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we'll get into that. I do want to push back, like, for a second. I'm not sure. I wouldn't want to throw people in jail for simply knowing Bannon, but I don't think that's what you meant, anyways. When you said, you know, Clinton should be thrown in jail for hanging out with Epstein, I don't think you meant, like, you think there's more to it than that, just them knowing each other.
Oh, right? No, absolutely. I mean, I am 100% positive that Bill Clinton was, you know, abusing kids along with Epstein. I'll throw in the caveat that Virginia Roberts, or Virginia Guaffieri, which is her, the name of her husband, she's married right now, but we'll just say Roberts because it's easier to pronounce, and I think more people will know her as Virginia Roberts. Virginia Roberts stated that, she was on the island with Epstein and Bill Clinton, but she never saw Bill Clinton engage in any, you know, any sex or anything like that. But when she questioned, she asked Epstein, you know, why would someone like that come down here? You know, and expose himself, something like this. And Epstein basically said, because he has blackmail on Bill Clinton, he alluded to the fact that, you know, he's able to control these people. So, you know, again, this is just one instance where we know, but I'm fairly, you know, certain that Bill Clinton, right. I mean, again, these guys are not, well, they're not talking about politics down there.
Right. Well, I wanted to, like, clarify that, because I don't think you're like, you're not like this weird Mike Cernovich character who's just like, hang everyone at all.
No.
Like, yeah. Mm. And I want my listeners to know that, like, you're very serious about all.
Oh yeah, stuff. No, absolutely, no. The please don't even. We could spend probably multiple shows me talking about Mike Cernovich, who is connected to Epstein as well.
What?
Hugely. He is basically working as Alan Dershowitz's proxy right now in a defamation suit, in a lawsuit. That started as a defamation suit and is now kind of moved on. But yeah, he's first off, he made that movie about free speech with Alan Dershowitz after all of these allegations. He had no fucking problem hanging out with Dershowitz then, all right? He has since basically gone after Virginia Roberts in the exact same way that Alan Dershowitz has. So Alan Dershowitz was trying to get the Ghislaine Maxwell's summary judgment opened. The judge had sealed essentially what Ghislaine Maxwell had said in her statement, basically refuting everything that Virginia Roberts had said. Now that was sealed in this lawsuit between Virginia Roberts and Ghislaine Maxwell, a defamation suit between the two of them. That was sealed, the summary judgment. Alan Dershowitz went on a crusade to get that sealed testimony unsealed because he believed that he could use that in order to basically disprove what Virginia Roberts had said, which was, you know, one of the main ones, was that she was forced to have sex with Dershowitz. Now, that didn't really kind of pan out the way Dershowitz wanted. And he was basically kind of stuck. He had no more appeals. He couldn't do anything. In steps Mike Cernovich, who made it his mission, and he still talks about it, on his, like, periscopes and whatnot. But he basically filed an identical lawsuit to Alan Dershowitz's. And now he states that, well, I'm just trying to get the truth, and he pretends as if what he's doing is actually a good thing, because he wants to expose all of the pedophiles. You know, that's Mike Cernovich's whole thing. So, but he's very misleading. There, he had a post, which is very difficult to find now. I have a screenshot of it. But back when his website was called Danger in Play, he had this post where he was talking about his crusade to get the truth out about Epstein and Bill Clinton. You know, of course, he'd always mentioned Clinton and Epstein. And he pretend he seems to have used Virginia Roberts gave a she presented her evidence for why she, you know, the summary judgment should remain sealed, and she basically said Mike Cernovich is a rapist, and he is working with Alan Dershowitz, and there's no reason that this needs to really be revealed. Mike Cernovich wrote on Danger in Play this blog post where he appears to have taken what Virginia Roberts said, this motion to suppress, and he states that it was actually Ghislaine Maxwell. Okay? So it might be a little confusing, but he takes Virginia Roberts' motion to keep this thing sealed up because he's a rapist and Dershowitz proxy, and he pretends as if it was Ghislaine Maxwell that wrote this. So again, Mike Cernovich can look like the fucking hero, you know, who's crusading against Maxwell, when in reality, it's the victim, is saying, I don't want this thing out there. And the reason that Virginia Ruff, now listen, I'm all for it. I would love to read everything. You know, there's so much of the Epstein, the various Epstein cases that are sealed. And a lot of them, you know, the Maxwell Guaffieri case, everything is sealed in that, unfortunately. I would love to see what Maxwell said. But essentially, what she says is going to refute the victim. It's going to call the victim a liar. And Mike Cernovich knows full well that's what he's doing. But he, you know, in the post, he says, oh, the accused madam is shook. Now, what is who is he referring to? Is he calling Virginia Roberts a madam? Or is he taking Virginia Roberts' words and making them seem like it is coming from the madam, the shook madam, Ghislaine Maxwell? And, you know, and Mike Cernovich knows who I am, because I've contacted him a million times about this, and I've emailed with both of his lawyers, including Mark Randazzo, who's a scumbag and a half, a really shady, you know, quote free speech lawyer. He's always on InfoWars, really nasty guy involved in some really sleazy stuff with the porno industry. And Randazzo, we've had emails back and forth about this, and I asked him point blank, why is Mike Cernovich appearing to either call Virginia Roberts, the victim, a madam, or he's appearing to manipulate his viewers and readers into thinking that it's actually Maxwell that is going after him. And Randazzo's response was, I'm not involved in the editorial parts of Danger in Play. Okay, and also, for a while, there seemed to be some sort of a typo, because on the docket sheet, they listed, they had the wrong address for Randazzo's law offices. And they were listing them up in like upstate New York, I think like by Albany or something like that. When I brought that up, he said, oh, it's a typo. It's wrong. And it was something silly, like there was a law firm Randozzo or something. And that's what and then like a day later, after we had this email and he was like, oh, that's a mistake by the court system, it was changed immediately. So, Cernovich he's totally up to his eyeballs in this. He is working with Alan Dershowitz, 100%. That's why Cernovich still to this day retweets Alan Dershowitz. This is a guy who was a known abuser, okay? Virginia Roberts was forced to have sex with Dershowitz, and she even says that, you know, she would be, performing oral sex on Epstein with Dershowitz in the room. Like, they would be having a business meeting, and that's how it would go down. And
well, I want to get into the ban and stuff, but real quick with Cernovich, my understanding of Cernovich is that he is probably one of the sleaziest people masquerading as a journalist. He basically is, you know, for all his talk about being red-pilled and all this shit, he's essentially a bitch boy for people that, don't want to get their hands dirty. They let him do it for them. They let him be the little hitman for, you know, to do character assassinations. And, you know, there was a story recently I was reading where he accused this one journalist of doxing a Trump supporter and saying that the Trump supporter was, like, underage.
Yeah, he made it up.
It later came out the guy was in his 20s, the guy that was doxed. And Cernovich was just saying, well, it doesn't matter that that's the truth. You lost control of the narrative,
yeah.
And now your life's
ruined.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Ha, ha, ha.
Oh, yeah.
He's a piece of
shit.
Oh,
100%. Absolutely. I despise Mike Cernovich. And I've definitely made it my mission in life to go after it. You know, he has a weird relationship also with, what's the movie about pedophilia in Hollywood? An Open Secret.
He's connected to
that? The producers behind An Open Secret love Mike Cernovich. Okay, and they will retweet him and vice versa. And again, when I you know, not the best venue, obviously, but I asked An Open Secret on Twitter, you know, I was like, I think you should do a little bit more vetting on the people that you are promoting, because Mike Cernovich is absolutely involved in Mike Cernovich's goal right now is to make Virginia Roberts look like a liar. And And also, what I'm sure that Maxwell will have very embarrassing information in her statement that will make Virginia Roberts look bad or guilty, or people won't believe her, or just simply to humiliate her once again. You know, again, like, let's just humiliate this person another time after years of being sexually humiliated and abused. But, you know, and an open secret, Gabe Hoffman and the other guy, mostly Gabe Hoffman, they did not like that at all. They instantly blocked me. But, you know, it's funny that Cernovich is the one that just all of a sudden found James Gunn's tweets making all these awful jokes. And, you know, I believe that, you know, an open secret, again, like you were just saying there, JG, they funnel information to Cernovich. You know, they were, hey, you should look at James Gunn's tweets. And then suddenly Cernovich does. And then he, boom, James Gunn gets fired. You know, I think an open secret, while I applaud them for what they did with that movie and for raising awareness, they know way more than they've let on about what's going on there. And they're very careful about what information they release and who they release it with. And Gabe Hoffman is 100% a, you know, right wing little, you know, investment. He's a hedge fund manager. You know, he's not an activist. He's not a filmmaker. He's a hedge fund manager out in Los Angeles. All Gabe Hoffman ever fucking tweets about is Tesla and Elon Musk. Now, for whatever reason, though, he decides he's gonna fund this movie, right? Which is already fraught with other problems, because you've got, I think the director is Amy Berg, who did an open secret, and she, you know, she went after the Catholic Church, basically did nothing to promote the movie herself, and also made a movie about the West Memphis Three, making them look totally innocent, which I don't entirely believe is really the case there. And again, you're talking about, even if you believe that you know, Eccles and the rest of them are innocent, just three young boys are brutally murdered. You know, and she doesn't really seem all that concerned with truly figuring out that. But anyway, an open secret, the accountant stuff, they love Cernovich. And I think they give him little nuggets like that. And then Cernovich goes out and, you know, he takes down James Gunn. I mean, how was it that all of a sudden Mike Cernovich was like, look at all these tweets? I mean, is he that much of a loser that he just scours? And why James Gunn? You know, why pick him? I think he was told to do that. And I think, you know, it's someone like the people in an open secret or other people. You know, it could be anyone. But somebody, I think, told him, look into this, publicize it. And he just does what he's told. Because he's a total fucking puppet. There's nothing real about him.
He's a water boy.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. 100%. I mean, that's what's so laughable about him. He puts on this whole big, you know, macho gorilla mindset, all this nonsense. And he, you know, for a while. I'm sorry.
Can I butt in real quick? As far as I know, too, most of the money he has gotten is alimony money from his ex-wife.
Yeah, who was worked at Google.
Yeah, well, so much for his whole, like, gorilla mindset. I mean, you're living off your ex-wife.
Oh, yeah, totally. No, that's what I mean. He's actually, he's still this inadequate, man-child that he's always been. Like, this, you know, he used to, for a while, he styled himself on Twitter as a national security reporter. But I mean, you know, we are more likely to be national security reporters than him. You know what I mean? But this is the thing. He can't actually he doesn't really do any investigation. He doesn't do, you know, he waits for people to come to him and use him as a conduit in the exact same way that Alan Dershowitz did. Dershowitz had to have gone to Cernovich and been like, listen, I need you to do me this. All right. Do me a solid, file the identical lawsuit that I'm doing, but because he has the facade of being a journalist, you know, because now the other, you know, the Daily News has jumped onto this Cernovich's lawsuit, and a bunch of other, you know, press associations and you know, freedom of the press foundations and stuff like that, all sorts of things. They've all jumped on this law. And I think it's good. I would love for everything to be unsealed. But keep in mind, he's trying to unseal something that will be used against the very person that he claims to be helping to protect.
Right, right. Well, that's, I mean, it's a whole nother thread entirely. I want to, I mean, do you have time to get into the ban and
yeah,
stuff
for, sure.
for a little bit? So going back to this, this Roy Moore thing, Bannon basically supports Roy Moore. I think Ivanka Trump comes out against Roy Moore. And Bannon makes this reference to a basically this lawsuit that a woman made against Trump and Epstein. And he basically responds to Ivanka saying, "What about the allegations about her dad and that 13-year-old?
Right.
But now, you know, even though he's referenced this Epstein Trump case that got dropped, as it were, he's now, you know, I saw Patricia Arquette, the actress, tweet about it. That's how I first heard about it. She tweeted, "Trump is meeting, or Bannon is meeting with Jeffrey Epstein, the billionaire pedophile." What is that all about?
I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I'll give you what my take on it. Is that obviously Bannon knew about the relationship that Epstein and Trump had, and that makes sense. If Bannon is, you know, if he really is as good as he says he is, he should know. You know what I mean? Like, that's his job, is to know where the bodies are buried. You know, he's the man behind Trump in many ways, or at least in terms of the campaign. And he might even still be kind of doing that, I would suspect. But, you know, anyone of Bannon's talent should know about this. And I think he knew a lot more than many other people knew. And I read the Roy Moore thing, that comment to Ivanka Trump, as he 100% believes that Donald Trump raped a 13-year-old girl with Jeffrey Epstein back in the 90s. That to me was confirmation that what Katie Johnson, who is the woman who she's now a woman who came forward with that lawsuit, that she's absolutely correct, that she was raped by Epstein and Trump. And that to me signaled that Bannon knew that, and he knew that to be true. And that is sort of, you know, going back to what I was saying a little bit earlier about the politicization of the sexual violence. Again, it's like Bannon's pedophile, Roy Moore, is okay, but Trump is bad, you know. But and I think that obviously Epstein heard that, you know what I mean? Somebody told him that this had been said. And I don't know. Perhaps Epstein was summoning Bannon to talk about this. Perhaps I know that, you know, like the New York Post reported on this encounter. And I believe they had someone there on the block. I mean, they saw him going in at like 8 a.m. or something like that. They speculated, and this was based on sources, who knows who they are, people that they spoke to, the Post, that Epstein might be trying to get back into politics, and he might be, you know, I mean, he probably still has vast sums of money. If he wanted to, he could do something with it. I don't know how likely that is. I don't know if I don't totally buy into that particular theory or idea. I think Epstein is too toxic, really, for anybody. Nobody wants to have a whiff of impropriety when it comes to Epstein. So again, if he's meant to be fronting money to Bannon, and Bannon is going to do whatever, he's in a lobby for a particular idea or policy, or he's in a you know, take that money and run another candidate or whatever. I don't think that anybody wants to find out that this money is coming from a convicted pedophile, especially one on the level of Epstein, where, I mean, nobody's really defending Epstein. You know, he's not like Roman Polanski, you know, or some of these other characters who have abused people in the past, but, you know, they can still kind of make it in society at large. Epstein's not like that. You know, and I think he's too toxic. And again, as you know, same before, he flew way too close to the sun with everything. And I think that the way that when the shit really hit the fan with him, and Epstein saw that a lot of his friends, you know, suddenly couldn't remember the guy, I think he, you know, he kind of saw that he ultimately is, not only is he still, you know, the outsider within those elite circles, but more importantly, you know, he messed up big time, and really he's just a criminal. You know, he's a criminal that was able to get in with a lot of these people, but ultimately he belongs within the circles of other criminals. And I think he was, you know, his time moonlighting as some sort of public intellectual is totally over. He's never ever going to attain that level of status again. So I don't really know. I mean, again, you know, I'm shocked that, you know, Steve Bannon is even awake at that hour. But, you know, lo and behold, he was. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, I would say anytime Steve Bannon is going and meeting with someone is a big deal. And the fact that it's Epstein is even stranger. I don't know. Perhaps I think it's more I think it's maybe more like a damage control thing, you know, it's some way of communicating information back and forth, perhaps. You know, I mean, I don't think that Epstein and Trump can talk on the phone anymore, you know, but maybe that's one way that they relay messages. I mean, Bannon really doesn't, I don't think he really gives a crap about what people think of him. So he has no problem walking into Epstein's house, you know, it doesn't really bother him. And again, for the most part, nobody even really noticed. I barely noticed, you know, and I'm all about the Epstein stuff. I didn't even really notice. You know, I don't know. I think it's maybe about communicating information. And it might also, I mean, who knows? Epstein might say, listen, I've got money in some account in Geneva, and we can funnel that money into you, and you can do so. I don't know. You can do something with it. I mean, I assume so. I mean, Bannon is dirty as the day is long. You know, from the whole Cambridge Analytica thing to virtually everything he touches. So, and again, I think, you know, Bannon is a criminal as well. And he just hasn't gotten caught like Epstein, but he is basically a criminal. You know, he straddles that line between, you know, criminality and the rest of us very well. But you know, his time might be coming sometime in the future. But I think that's more the type of person that Epstein is comfortable with as well. And I mean, then you can also kind of factor in the whole Bannon meth house, and they're shooting porn down there. There's, you know, allegations that some of these women were being, you know, locked inside the house. I don't know. I would assume that Epstein, you know, might have known about this. You know what I mean? Like, who knows? They're all in the same circles. It's in Florida.
So for my listeners that may not be familiar with this, the Bannon meth and porn house, I think the thing the way he responded to it, or people have tried to cover for it, is that he was like trying to keep his wife away from his ex-wife Diana away from drugs,
right?
So he like let her stay at the house, and there's like literally like a hole in the bathtub. There's pictures of a hole in the bathtub because they were cooking meth, you know, and shooting porn. And my question is, if he was trying to get her off drugs, why not get her into rehab?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Also, if you're trying to get her off drugs, why is, like, you know, all the furniture was, like, coated in meth? You know, like, when they tested it, it was, like, everything tested positive for methamphetamine. And it's also, you know, with all these, like, locks and shit in the house. It doesn't make any sense. Obviously, Bannon wasn't trying to keep her off drugs. I mean, wasn't it Bannon, his ex-wife, and his current wife, they were all living together?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I guess the, I forget, I think one of the major newspapers reported on it and said that Bannon wasn't living at the house at that time.
Right.
It's real weird. I don't know. I mean, I understand why the press was cautious with this story, but, you know, it's a weird one. I want to note, I don't think it was just like some tabloids covering it.
Bannon didn't really deny it. You know, he wasn't like, that's not my house, or like, I don't know what was going on in there. You know, it was absolutely his house. You know, he was still, I think Ed interviewed one of the guys that lived there, afterwards. And, you know, he said Bannon's mail was still getting delivered there, or his wife's mail was, at least. And yeah, as far as I know, Bannon's never denied that he owned the house. Because there's also, like, a weird thing about, like, where he was, like, voting. You know, like, where he was, like, technically registered.
Well, that's what, I think the Post story that was covering this, they mainly focused on the voter fraud thing. They didn't get as much into the meth stuff, but they implied things.
Right. And again, I mean, yeah, they implied things, and Bannon wasn't like, no, that didn't happen, you know? the whole thing, it adds another layer of sleaze to a guy that's already, like, super sleazy and is not, you know, he's not the person he portrays himself to be.
How would you sum up the story? I know we've sort of danced around the brief summary of it.
Of the meth house?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think Bannon was using it. My honest opinion, I think he was using it to fucking do meth and have sex with people and film them doing it, you know? And you look at Bannon, I mean, he looks like he's definitely a cokehead, if not a meth user.
You can tell he has, like, the red cheeks. You can kind of tell he's an alcoholic.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, like, his nose looks like it's about to fall off sometimes.
It looks like Rudolph the Red-Nosed
Reindeer. Yeah, totally.
Reindeer.
No, no. And, I mean, you look at him, too, and it's just like, that's a man that, like, goes for days at a time and then just, like, crashes because their body, like, can't handle it anymore. But, yeah, I don't know. I think he was using it as some sort of, like, a place to, maybe, you know, in much the same way that Epstein did. You know, this is the real Bannon, you know? He has these really perverse, fucked up desires, and this is how he plays them out.
What I'm getting at is, like, what do we know was found in the house?
I think what we know that was found in the house were, like, the, don't quote me because I can't remember specifically, but I'm pretty sure these, like, weird locks were found, you know, like, so they could lock from, like, the inside or something like that. There was definitely, you know, the former guy that was there, found traces of methamphetamine, you know, because, again, if you're cooking meth, it's going to be everywhere. You know, it's going to be on, especially like fabric and things like that, like a carpet. It's going to be absorbed in all of that. And Bannon 100% owned the house. Like, it was his house. There's, like, no doubt about that whatsoever. Now beyond that, I don't know. I mean, I know that there was, like, a handyman who, worked on the house periodically, and he's told some, you know, horror stories about, you know, hearing people screaming and people running out. The former owner of the house, who Ed Opperman has interviewed before, you know, he said that weird people would come, you know, at odd hours looking for, I think it was Steve Bannon's ex-wife or other people. And they seemed, you know, strung out, you know, and or, you know, just fully high when they came there. I think there was some sort of, like, you know, evidence that they were shooting pornography. I know that was said. I don't know what that means. You know what I mean? Like, maybe there was, like, a room that, I don't know, had camera lights in it or something like that. I'm not really sure. But I know that that was something that was stated in some of these things. But, I mean, just even if there was nothing else, the fact that Steve Bannon owned a house and it tested for meth should be a story. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, even if the story is that he just used it to register to vote.
Like, right, yeah, exactly. Even if
the fact that you could allow the house to be used is like a meth house. Yeah.
And his ex-wife was, like, under investigation at the time for smuggling drugs. Smuggling drugs and a cell phone into a Miami jail. And I think, I'm not sure, I think that was, like, her boyfriend or something. You know, so then it's like you've got Bannon and his current wife living with his ex-wife, and his ex-wife is smuggling, you know, meth or coke and a cell phone to her boyfriend in jail. You know, like, what is going on? And this, and Bannon, you know, Mr. Conservative, goes to CPAC. I mean, this is like, what happened to family values? like, I mean, there's nowhere to be seen with this guy.
And it's weird too, because it's not, you would think that it would be like some big house. I think I'm looking at a picture right now. It's like one floor. It's like real small. I think it went for like $1.2 million though when he sold it. So when it was sold to the latest guy who owns it.
Oh yeah, I mean, again, look at it. Look at Epstein's Palm Beach house. It's nothing to go home and write about. It's pretty, especially by Palm Beach standards. You know, I mean, it's ugly. It's you know, so I mean I don't know like what that really means in a larger thing, but I think that you know it kind of fits with the Bannon thing. You know, this is because I think it's about not attracting attention. If it's true, you know, Steve Bannon, he is a pretty recognizable person. He's famous. You know, he ran Breitbart, all these things. But he was operating a meth house and making porno, you know, in the same way that Epstein is quite famous. But I think it's about kind of like, you know, flying under the radar to an extent, which is why I found their meeting interesting. You know, I think it's birds of a feather. You know, these guys, they understand the world that they live in, you know, and they respect each other on that level or something. But, yeah, I mean, the whole Bannon meth thing is great. And again, it was just like, you know, it got the Washington Post.
It's unfortunate because the –
I was going to say, I mean, Washington Post picked it up and then, you know, it went away. And a few other people as well.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. I feel like I don't want to get, like, conspiratorial and say the media doesn't want to cover it. I think at best the best case scenario is that the leads have just gone completely cold.
Yeah, I think there's an element of that with the Steve Bannon thing, because why wouldn't the Post want to go after him? But with the Epstein stuff, I do think that's the media is knowingly not touching it. And I don't know if that's like a they're all in on it. I think it's more just, you know, no one is interested in the story. Number one, unfortunately, and number two, where are they going to? Are they? You know, is it, what newspaper is going to go? You know, or a major, you know, mainstream publication is going to go out on a line and accuse the sitting president of being a pedophile? That's not going to fly. You know what I mean? That's just not going. You know, it's just they know that story is going nowhere. And I'm sure they know that their editors are going to say, absolutely not. We are not covering this. We're not touching this. Because again, too, I mean, Epstein's reach is such that, you know, he's hanging out with George Stephanopoulos. Katie Couric was at his coming home party. You know, she went to his house after he got out for paying 15-year-old girls to jerk him off. And Katie Couric is going to his house to celebrate. You know, so, I mean, again, he was able to get so many of these people on his side. And it's not even, like, getting on their side. You know, I know that a lot of people are like, you know, they'll bring up the, oh, well, so-and-so, you know, but Bill Clinton flew on his plane. And it's like, you know, I don't care that Donald Trump did because Bill Clinton did. You know, that means, you know, that doesn't mean anything in and of itself. You know, a lot of people flew on his plane. And I don't think that everyone that flew on his plane or that hung out with him are necessarily sexual predators. But what did they know is a big one. And the other one is it doesn't matter. They're tainted by that fact. You know, it's like it doesn't matter if you didn't do anything, but if you're hanging out with a murderer or a rapist, people are going to be like, okay, well, you know, yes, Pierce is innocent, but why is he hanging out with this person? You know what I mean? Like, so that's like, well, that's sort of the power of Epstein too.
It's like what I said earlier. I just found it like really interesting when Patricia Arquette, she tweeted, Jeffrey Epstein, Bannon has lunch with him last week. Google it. 23rd August 2018. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it raises questions for people, you know, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, that's also just the it works in his benefit as well. He is so toxic that anyone that had any connection to him is never going to want to come forward because they don't want people to know that they had a connection with him.
And that's the issue with Bannon, too, because I feel like Bannon has become sort of a persona non grata now. I mean, even Breitbart had to, at least on the surface, completely sever ties with him.
Yeah, you might be totally right on that. You know, I mean, they might see each other as they're both so toxic, like, what's going to happen? You know? And yeah, maybe that's, I don't know, maybe this is Bannon's Hail Mary play. Get money from Epstein, start another media organization, start a lobbying group or something. I don't know. It is shocking, though, like, I mean, that they're hanging out publicly. Like, I mean, not publicly, but, you know, they're not meeting in like a, you know, underground parking lot. I mean, he walks straight into his house. And,
well, I think they were trying to keep it under wraps, but obviously someone found out about it.
Yeah.
And they reported
well,
on it.
Well, I mean, the way I initially thought with the New York Post thing is like they had a reporter out there. I know that, you know, the Daily Mail for several years had someone stationed outside of Epstein's house. That's how, you know, they were able to get these, you know, pictures of Epstein and his like new girlfriends. Because, I mean, again, this is a guy that he's either in his house or he's, like, you know, on his way to the airport to go to his other house. He's not out and about. But, you know, the Daily Mail for a while, they had a reporter just out there waiting for him to step out and, you know, snag a couple of pictures of him and, you know, his new young girlfriend and some other weird characters that were going in and out of his house. But, you know, so maybe that's what the Post said. I don't. Yeah, exactly. I mean, either way. It wasn't a secret for very long, although I would assume, you know, I think it's totally in the memory hole now. Nobody is, like you said, I mean, I barely even saw it, you know, and I generally, you know, I consider myself pretty, you know, ear to the ground when it comes to the Epstein stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the hell it means, but it is an interest. Again, I don't think they were just talking about the weather. And there's something is happening, whether it's damage control or communicating between for a third party, or they're gonna work together. I don't know.
Well, it's weird because this is the guy that sort of like I said, he made that response to Ivanka. He's basically referencing Trump and Epstein.
Yes, right.
And yeah, now he's seeing Epstein.
No, I know, I mean, exactly.
It's just very
weird. Well, I mean, well, clearly Bannon doesn't give a shit who he works with or what he says. You know what I mean? Right. I mean, that's what I initially thought was like, maybe this is like Bannon apologizing, you know, like, hey, sorry, I flew off the handle. I shouldn't have said that. Cause who knows? Maybe I think that if Bannon is going to his house to talk in person, that to me signals that they might actually know each other previously. And again, it wouldn't surprise me when you look at Bannon's history and the whole meth house, shooting porno, all that kind of stuff. There's shades of Epstein there. So I don't know. Maybe they know each other beyond what we think. Like, it's what, you know, because I don't know why Bannon wouldn't just call him up. You know, going to him in person says a lot. Which either, again, it either is in much the same way that, you know, Donald Trump held up his own plane so that Epstein could make it. That's a big statement. That says that Jeffrey Epstein, wears the pants in that relationship between him and Trump. And Bannon coming to Epstein's house, I think, again, that, you know, that could signal that Bannon understands that this guy is a very powerful person, and I'm going to go to his house. You know, I'm not going to call him on the phone. I'm not going to have him meet me somewhere, or you know, we're not going to meet elsewhere in an undisclosed location. I'm going to go to his house. I think that kind of, I think that also just signals that Epstein is still someone to be feared. And who knows? Maybe he's got something on Bannon. I don't know.
Well, it's you know, it gets to this issue that I guess we can wrap up on this issue of, like, where things are going in the future, because, man, are we living in some weird times. I keep, like, wondering to myself, you know, I see all these alternative media, quote-unquote alternative media outlets that were nothing a few years ago. Real low production values, all this stuff, like Red Ice. Mm-hmm. Now they go full neo-Nazi and they have the slickest production values. We have Trump in office. We have Bannon running around with Epstein. You know, all of this stuff is just swirling around, and I'm like, where is the money coming from? Who's going down next? I don't know what's going on with the Mueller investigation. I just heard that Roger Stone is asking for GoFundMe stuff from people because he's going down next. Where do you see stuff heading? Do you think there's anything to the Mueller investigation, for instance?
No, not really. I think I'm sure there's something there. And clearly, you know, we've Manafort, you know, things have kind of caught up with him.
You know, it's funny. I knew people that were talking about Manafort like 12 years ago, and everyone called them conspiracy nuts. Guys like, I think even Daniel Hopsicker was talking about Manafort. And now, like, all those guys are proven right, but they're not getting any credit for it.
No, totally. But no, I don't think there's really too much to the Mueller thing. I mean, I'm sure the stuff will absolutely come out. And I think there will definitely be some sacrificial lambs. I wouldn't be all that surprised if Roger Stone was one of them. You know, he seems to have burned every conceivable bridge that he has. And he's lied so many times, you know, I think he's running out of, he's running out of cards to play when it comes to this.
Did you see the night Trump got elected? It was really interesting because InfoWars had a feed in D.C.
when they're both
Roger
hammered.
Roger Stone was there. Yeah, but Roger Stone looked like pale as a ghost and like he didn't want to say much.
Yeah.
At least at first, it was weird. Like it's like Stone knows something, and Alex Jones is just there saying he's like the grandson of Charlemagne and Stone.
Yeah.
He's stone faced. Right. Like he knows something.
I thought Stone was just, I mean, loaded. You know, like that wasn't just booze. Right. They were like doing pills or something. But yeah, at the same time, he also just looked tired and yeah, I think, listen, I don't even think Roger Stone necessarily wanted Trump to win. You know, I think the whole Trump winning thing was just like, was something that nobody predicted, or even if Stone wanted it to happen, I think he had convinced himself that it wasn't. And you know, listen, it's like if Trump hadn't have won, none of this stuff would be happening right now with Mueller. But because he won, the Democrats want blood, and Trump is not very good at crisis management. And apparently Roger Stone is garbage at crisis management, you know, even though he's, you know, he can supposedly get you out of any jam and stuff like that. I mean, he's done nothing but lie and contradict his own previous statements. And, you know, I think everyone is just sort of been is gotten fed up with Roger Stone. And, you know, everybody is like, oh, you want to hear, you know, you want the truth about Roger Stone? Sure, I'll give you the truth. So I wouldn't be surprised if Roger Stone went down on some level, because I think he's just, I think he's burned all of his bridges. And I don't even know if Donald Trump himself is going to go out on a limb for him. I'm not sure. I think, you know, he would for Paul Manafort for sure. But Stone, I don't know. I mean, maybe. But I don't think too much is going to come out of the Mueller thing. I think it's just going to be a constant ongoing battle, you know. And even when the Mueller investigation closes up and, you know, we get to read the final report, whatever happens will not be enough for the Democrats. They're going to want more and more. And, you know, it's Russians are everywhere. They're infiltrating all assets of, you know, facets of society. So they're going to keep going. I think that's going to be a continual soap opera. And in a lot of ways,
well, it's weird too, because I mean, isn't Trump continuing to back the Kiev regime in the Ukraine? I mean, he's actually continuing policies from Obama's presidency that didn't make Putin happy. I don't even think Putin likes Obama anymore, or Trump anymore.
No. Like, no, that's what I mean. I think actually that the Mueller thing and all of the bits and pieces of that, I think it actually works in Trump's favor to an extent, because it's a great distraction. No one's actually looking at the fact that, you know, he is a neocon. You know, no one's looking at all of the horrible geopolitical decisions that he's making. Instead, they're obsessed with he's a Russian agent. And I think, you know, Trump kind of likes it. He likes, you know, I think it works in his favor having this sort of distraction. Because, listen, beyond, now, obviously, like in terms of foreign policy, he is able to do things and they're pretty much all abhorrent and awful. But beyond that, he really doesn't do anything. I mean, it really is like his days consist of Fox and Friends and being on Twitter. There's no laws are being passed. I mean, he's gotten a lot of conservative judges placed around the country, but that was really his White House counsel that pushed that, and he just fired him for no. I don't even know why. I mean, even the White House counsel, he didn't even know that was going to happen. So, you know, aside from that, he hasn't really accomplished much of anything. Now, he, you know, of course, he'll spout off these talking points about job numbers and record, you know, low black unemployment and factories and all. But none of that is actually true. And he knows it's not true. So I think the Mueller stuff, again, works in his favor, because he, you know, it's just a great distraction from the fact that he does absolutely nothing. He's a very ineffectual president in a lot of ways.
Well, I mean, the thing that I think may really screw Trump in the end is, you know, hush money contributions and this, like, McDougal and Stormy Daniels stuff. I go back and forth on that. But, like, I don't think it's going to be Russia that ruins Trump. I think the fact that at the end of the day, Trump is a person who he's a malignant narcissist that only has ever known. He only knows people that are mercenaries. You know, that's why he was with people like Stormy Daniels or Michael Cohen. Not that I have anything against like Stormy Daniels, but they're obviously all these people are very mercenary people. They're like, I'm going to save my own ass and get everything I can out
for
of
sure.
This. Omarosa. You know, he doesn't know how to make the right kind of friends.
No, not at all. No, and I think, you know, it when he was just a real estate person or a, you know, D-list celebrity with a show, it was fine. You know, having shitty friends was okay. But now, I mean, he's in a position where, you know, he should have picked some better people. I think the other thing is nobody really wants to even defend him anymore. You know what I mean? It's like you said, I mean, he picks these, like, you know, cutthroat people as friends. Well, they're all cutting and running. You know, I think Roger Stone is fed up with him. You know, Trump is not doing anything to really help Roger Stone at the moment. I mean, he's defended Paul Manafort way more than Stone, and they've known each other for decades. So yeah, I think I think that's another problem. He just picks awful people to be close, and he's just picking them because they kiss his ass. That's all he cares about. You know.
Well, I mean, with the Stormy Daniels thing in particular, I've kind of loved how the right wing has been trying to attack her, where they're like, you're a whore, and you're this, and you're that. And she's like, yes, that's true. I would like to make a movie out of this whole scandal. I would like to make a lot of money off of it, and maybe, you know, a memoir. Like, you can't stop people that have...
Right.
Like, the people he has surrounded himself have no shame in the same way that he has no
totally.
Shame.
Totally. Well, it's like, oh, she's a whore, but it's like... She didn't force Trump to sleep with her. You know, I mean, what does that say about him? Again, it's just like his decision making. It's like, not only did you have an affair with a porn star while your wife had just given birth, which is like, you know, not it's not the crime of the century, but it's certainly morally inappropriate. But, you know, he also picks the porn star that's like, I don't give a fuck about you or your family or anything. Like, I'm going to get mine and, like, you know, whatever. Like, she's coming out on top no matter what. You know, she's world famous now. You know, I mean, she probably already was in a sense with all the porn. But, you know, right. I mean, this is the other thing. It's just like, not only did you, you know, you made a bad decision with having this affair, but then you pay her off and then you couldn't even really keep a lid on that. And you had an affair with someone that is clearly more ambitious than you are, and she's gonna make something of this. Especially too, it's like if you're gonna like, I feel like every time people like attack, you know, oh, she's a slut, this and that. It's like, please, like that's, you know, she's just taking all of that and you know, it's making her harder and more determined to screw him over. But that's like the whole problem with like all the people that he gets close with, like Omarosa. Clearly, Omarosa knew something and was fucking, you know, blackmailing Trump for this job. I mean, it's just like, why even keep someone like that around? You know, but because she, again, too, all this Trump, like, oh, she was so terrible. It's like, yeah, but you knew she was terrible, but because she praised you, you still gave her the most cushy position in the White House? I mean, he's an idiot. He really is, like, the worst, like, he is the worst businessman of all time.
I liked when he when Michael Cohen flipped, he made a tweet at like 5 a.m. Right. And he said, I would suggest anyone that needs to get a lawyer, do not retain Michael Cohen.
Right. And you know what? That might be one of the most accurate statements that Trump ever made. But it's like, dude, it was your lawyer. Like, you picked him. Yeah, I mean, he's a complete, utter buffoon. I mean...
I like how he called... I like how he specifically... He didn't call Michael Cohen a liar. He just kept calling Michael Cohen a rat.
Right.
And I just thought to myself, wow, you're really showing your affinity for Atlantic City mob types.
Totally. It's like when he was, you know, calling Omarosa a dog and all of this. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's his whole with his hands and... I mean, the funniest thing, too, is that he is just like some rich, you know, spoiled little brat. He's not a gangster, you know, like, I mean, he wishes he was, I think. You know, because again, too, a gangster could probably have an affair with a porn star and nothing would happen.
Yeah, it's funny, too. I know some of the Gotti family are like big Trump supporters.
Oh, of course.
Like Angel Gotti, John Gotti's daughter.
Yeah, no, another brilliant family.
ain't that the truth? So I guess in conclusion, you know, do you see the House of Cards falling in on, you know, everyone's worried about the rise of right-wing populism and Trump and Trumpism. Where do you see the clown car of the American empire headed right now?
I don't know. That's a tough one to sum up. I myself do fear the right-wing populism. I do think that there is an opening for something of an alternative, and we're already kind of seeing that happen with there's the I can't remember what her name is now. She was just a
Ocasio Cortez.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think she's really anything beyond she's a Democrat, first off. I mean, she's not running as a socialist. She's just a Democrat. She just happens to have a bit more of a left-wing flavor, or at least that's what she's claiming. I think she's probably a phony through and through, but she is the first step towards something of a leftist alternative. And I think that as much as the right-wing populism increases, I think that will have to push more people into thinking about a left-wing alternative. And not to say that we should have leftist populism or something like that, or, you know, something as extreme as the right. But, you know, I think that I think that's going to happen. I think that everything will probably have to get a little bit crappier before that happens, and I think there will be some sort of big thing. I think, you know, the economy crashing again. We never really recovered from the
it's projected to crash again in 2019 or
yeah, exactly. I mean, right. And I think when that crashes, it's really going to crash. I mean, this is something that nobody really talks about, but I mean, the student loan bubble is way crazier than the housing bubble ever was. Because you're giving children tons of money, and they don't have anything. They don't have houses. They don't have cars that you can seize. They don't have savings. There's nothing. So, I mean, when that bubble pops, I mean, they will just have to kind of forgive everything, because there's no way that, you know, anyone's going to be able to, they're going to have to just bail that whole thing out or just let it go. But, I mean, that's going to happen. So I think economically, financially, things are going to have to get a little bit more grim, as scary and depressing as that is. But I think that's the only thing that's really going to kind of push people into possibly, you know, organizing or politically changing their minds. I did not like Bernie Sanders at all. And I certainly didn't vote for him. I voted for a crazy third party candidate. But you know, again, I think that's the first step towards something. And I certainly would prefer Bernie Sanders to be president right now than Donald Trump.
Well, I mean, the thing with Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez and, you know, rightists like that, you know, that midget Ben Shapiro, they will not tell you this. I mean, ultimately, what Ocasio-Cortez and what people like Bernie Sanders want, and Robert Reich is pretty open about it, their whole thing is like saving capitalism from itself again.
Right.
You know, they have sort of an FDR view of things. Because right now, I think we're headed, it's either going to be that direction or we're going into something that's going to closely resemble feudalism or left-wing populism. So I would prefer that we don't move into the feudalist track. That's all I'm
worried
about.
No, yeah, me
right
neither.
Now.
And it does seem unfortunately, that's, you know, more and more reality. But I don't know. I think I try not to be too pessimistic. I was like talking about this recently with my girlfriend. We were both kind of like, you know, just feeling like, you know, fuck the world. Everything is horrible. Everything is falling apart. You know, we're poisoning the planet. We're poisoning each other, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I also just sort of reached a point, like, well, the powers that be also always want us to be like that. So, like, the first step is to not, like, let yourself be so susceptible to that kind of thing. Because, like, apathy and, like, depression and stuff always works well for capitalism. Or particularly, not capital, like, hyper-capitalism. You know, buy this to make yourself feel better. You know, if you make more money and you have more material goods, you will feel better about yourself. You know, something's not right, try this pill. You know, like they want us to be depressed and apathetic, the hyper-capitalists. So
right.
If we can kind of do our best to live our lives and try to be happy, I think that's the first step. And I think that's something that's not being looked at. You know, people aren't doing that, unfortunately. And I think that's the first step that we need to do. And then I think we can actually start looking at alternative. I mean, listen, also just keep in mind, I mean, the powers that be love the right wing. That's why they, you know, that's why they're going after Jeremy Corbyn, who's about as, you know, as left wing as Bernie Sanders was. So not at all. But they are so terrified of Jeremy Corbyn that, you know, he's an anti-Semite, he's a terrorist, he loves the Muslims, he's this, that, and the other thing, because he represents the most mild, watered down, you know, sort of like democratic socialism. So, I mean, the you know, the powers that be fear all of that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a reason why we're still, why we just tried to assassinate Maduro in Venezuela. There's a reason that why we've been trying to, you know, assassinate Castro for so many years. You know, the powers that be fear any of that kind of stuff. And I'm by no means like advocating for socialism or communism or anything like that. But, you know, I think gradual, you know, shifts in that direction are good. And I think that I know that socialism has like a, probably not amongst your listeners, but amongst many people has, it's like a dirty word. But, you know, to be honest, I would love if, like, you know, we didn't have to worry about healthcare. My healthcare costs are still astronomically high. Okay. And we're still, you know, it is the most corporatized system of insurance here in America. So, you know, I would be totally fine with some sort of a socialized medicine. I don't think that that's going to bring about, you know, this Stalin or something like that. So I think those things are listen, even here in New York, you know, that's even being kind of talked about as a possibility. I do, you know, I think there's some inroads here and there, but I think ultimately people need to kind of wake up to the reality that, like you said, trying to fix the capitalist system that we're in right now, or the hyper capitalist system, is not really going to do anything, you know. And that is, I think you're totally spot on. That's what the Bernie Sanders and his ilk are really about, is preserving the system, or bringing it back to like an FDR type model, which is a joke. You know, that's not progress or anything.
And, you know, I think the other thing people have to keep in mind is that, as tempting as it is to take this sort of, as I call it, Alex Jonestown drinking the Kool-Aid path of thinking of the elites as this monolithic entity, I'm not sure that that's the case. Different segments of elite society have different end games.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely. And I think we're due for a radical change in America. I think it's, you know, the pressure valve needs to be released. Unfortunately, it'll probably be pretty traumatic, but you know, you and I and our generation is probably going to have to live through that, and we may never really see a positive change in our lifetime. I mean, I don't want to be that pessimistic, but it is certainly a possibility. But at the same time, I think, you know, we can kind of overcome that if we try. I don't know. I just hate to be so doom and gloom. You know, that's really like what Alex Jones thrives on. And again, that's what like right wingers thrive on too. You know, they're it's white genocide. They're coming to get us. The Muslims are everywhere. You know, like that's what they want. They want us to be like that. You know, it that's not entirely true at all. And I think we can do stuff. I mean, we can. I think we have to. That's what I'm saying. Is like, I think we will. It will be a necessity that we will have to change politically beyond the spectrum of Democrat and Republican, because that's just, that model is going to fail. And listen, it should fail, because in like virtually every other country, including like Russia and Turkey, you know, all these places that we tend to say, oh, they're so evil. You know, they have a multitude of political parties, and small, you know, more radical political parties in a lot of these countries have real sway and power. And that's how it should be here. And I think we're kind of seeing the first steps towards that. But unfortunately, I mean, the system in America is so authoritarian that it's going to take some serious events, I think, to kind of push us to changing. But I think it will happen. And then just briefly to go back, the Epstein thing, I don't know. I hope, and it's my opinion, that will eventually, that House of Cards will come tumbling down as well. And I think it's going to be death by a thousand cuts, but I think, you know, drip by drip, more and more stories are coming out, particularly about Donald Trump and Epstein, and it's going to get to a point where it's going to be unavoidable. And, you know, I've had him on my show, Sam Spadino, who was the him along with his friend. They were the protesters that put up the sign, "Who is Jeffrey Epstein?" With a picture of Trump and Epstein. And he, you know, Trump kicked him out of a rally. He was like 10 feet away from him. I think my goal is, you know, more people doing that. And that's a great way because, you know, if someone at every Trump rally is doing that, it's going to be unavoidable and the media will have to talk about it. Like they did to an extent with Sam Spadino. You know, Fox News had that picture suddenly all over on their feed. You know, they didn't cut away Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein in a picture. Who is Jeffrey Epstein? So I think that will come tumbling down. There's already been more drips and drabs. When Trump was really hounding Mueller, what happens? The FBI releases their partial file on Jeffrey Epstein with lots of references to Donald Trump in there. Some of them, I think, even strategically placed in terms of the documents that they were listing. So I think that something will happen with that. It's inescapable. No one can go that long. And you really can't. I don't think you can execute a good cover up anymore with the proliferation of the internet and social media. I just, you can't get away with it anymore. So that I think will also come tumbling down, and that will be amazing. because, you know, Jeffrey Epstein deserves to be back in prison for the rest of his life, along with all the other people that helped facilitate all of this abuse. And again, you don't need to go on, like, you know, 4chan and subreddits and talk about Epstein and the occult and his temple and all this nonsense and, you know, the Hollywood pedophiles and satanic, you know, rituals and all that stuff. The Epstein stuff is all fact-based. There's tons and tons of factual evidence. It's all right there. It's right in front of you if you want to look for it. You know, you don't have to go to Mike Cernovich to get that information. You can go get it yourself. It's all there, and it's very straightforward. You know, there are a few very brave women that have come forward to tell their story and present factual evidence, and eventually there's going to be more and more brave women, and I hope some men as well, who were involved in this on some level, and it will be impossible for you cannot sue everybody, okay? And he's not gonna be able to win all these cases, and hopefully, you know, with the Jane Doe 43 case, if that, you know, we might get some real big bombshells there. And listen, Epstein might be up against a wall, and he might, you know, have to kind of throw them some bones, and maybe we'll get someone big out of that. So, but, you know, I just want to, yeah, encourage people that all of that stuff is there if you want to look for it. And a lot of it's all stuff that you can prove. You know, you don't need to go to wild conspiracy theories. And I try to never do that with the Epstein thing, because there's no need to do that. It's all right there. But anyway, that's my spiel, I guess, for the day.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say is, We're up against the wall in a lot of ways, but we're not necessarily up against something that's as monolithic as people like Alex Jones and these other just idiots want to say. Things are a lot more complex and are going to get a lot more weird than people think. I'm not sure we're going to slide completely into the abyss, so I'm not as doom and gloom about it. I think. You know, what's that Leonard Cohen sign? It's where the cracks are where the light shines through. Mm-hmm. So,
no, definitely. And again, too, like you were saying, you know, Alex Jones will make it, you know, oh, it's a crazy thing with pedophiles and blah, 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 and it's this huge story. Whereas, no, the Epstein thing is super simple. He's a pedophile. He abused kids. He got caught. And he should go to jail. End of story. It's not as complicated as Mike Cernovich would have you believe, where, you know, it's the Hollywood pedophiles and Harvey Weinstein and the NXIVM cult and all these other things. No, it's not. It's very straightforward. The Epstein case is extremely straightforward because, in part, the people that were investigating him did a great job in laying out the evidence. So yeah, I mean, don't get so bogged down in all this stuff. It's right there in front of you. And yeah, the doom and gloom stuff is never helpful.
Well, I want to thank you again, Pierce Redmond, for coming on Parallax Views.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed the second part of my conversation with Pierce Redmond of Porkin's Policy Review and the Open Minds Foundation on the sordid saga of Jeffrey Epstein. Until next time, I have a track to close out the show. It's called Decadence by Soul Glue. Check them out, folks.